And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Both Joe and Marquise Munson back at the Wholesaling Studio powered by RumbleOn.com. And Joe, you guys had a really interesting idea at The Athletic to put together a Nashville Sports Hall of Fame. And essentially, it's a 25-member class of the Nashville Sports Hall of Fame. And you guys stopped after pick 24 to leave the last selection up to the readers and the fans. How did this idea kind of come about? And just some really interesting names that we'll get to here in just a second on the list.
Yeah, well, it came from above, at The Athletic. I mean, there's a lot of brainstorming going on, right now because we don't have any sports to cover. So we're trying to come up with some things that, like, all the cities can do. And so all the cities are doing some kind of a Hall of Fame, but kind of left it up to the cities to do how they wanted to do it. Like Houston, for example, they just had theirs, and it was 17 people. And they kept it to people who played for pro teams in Houston. Now, of course, they have Oilers and Texans. They have Comets, which was some great players. You have Astros. You have Rockets. So, I mean, you got a bigger pool of pro teams there. So they did it that way. Buffalo did it like us, which is like a snake draft and top 25. We argued so much over 25, not like vicious arguing, but, it's tough. I mean, there's a lot of people who could make this list that we decided to just leave it up to fan voting. I believe right now, and I'm going off a comment from Mitch Light, our managing editor for the Nashville site. Mookie Betts is leading the fan vote. You can go to theathletic.com/Nashville and vote. And we have a 90-day free trial right now, too. So, you can check this out for free. And, we started with a vote. So my guy, Adam Vingan, and frankly, I was surprised this guy went number one, but he picked Steve McNair number one overall, and then we kind of went from there with a snake draft, just like a fantasy football draft.
I do want to give Vingan some credit. I was shocked he went with a Titans player with number one overall.
Yeah, hockey guy, what's going on, Vingan?
I know, I thought he would pull out Cali Yarncroak in the first round or something like that, and Vingan would go that route. So to his credit, he did go with McNair. And to your point, Joe, Adam Vingan, a part of this panel, Mitch Light, yourself, and the great John Glennon, a part of this as well at The Athletic. I think McNair, when you look at it, I mean, it's a pretty easy choice. Not necessarily, you can make arguments for, Wilmer Rudolph being number one or Pat Summitt.
Yes.
But certainly Steve McNair, it's tough to argue with that one, I think. Just everything he meant to the Titans, taking the team to the Super Bowl, the great career he had winning the co-MVP with Peyton Manning in 2003, and just the impact he had on this franchise, Steve McNair certainly belongs in the at least the top part of this list for sure.
Yeah, the hard part of this is you got people who played for pro franchises here. You got people who played for college teams here. But then you have people who are from here and went elsewhere and did great things. I mean, we considered everyone. We also decided to, because, you could also keep it to, Nashville proper. We decided to, go Clarksville and Murfreesboro, included as well, So, and that is why Pat Summitt, and I picked Pat Summitt. I had the third pick. I mean, to me, if I was doing this on my own, she would have been my number one. I would have gone Pat Summitt one and Wilmer Rudolph two, but I mean, Pat Summitt, I wrote it this way. Think about, if you did Mount Rushmores. People love doing those Mount Rushmores, right? She'd be on Nashville's. She'd be on the States. I think she'd be on UT's. I mean, what would UT's Mount Rushmore be? I think it'd probably be Pat Summitt, General Nealand.
Fulmer.
Yeah. I mean, I guess at some point it's sort of like, is it all coaches or do you have players too? Is it Peyton, is Johnny Majors? I mean, Johnny Majors is a coach and a player. Certainly had a better playing career than Fulmer. But, but I think Summitt and Nealand, you start with those two, right?
Sure.
She'd be on the women's basketball Mount Rushmore. And I think that she'd be on a general – she'd be at least talked about in a general basketball Mount Rushmore and a women's athletics Mount Rushmore. So
oh, I think so.
So if you're including, Clarksville, and she's of course went to Cheatham County High School, then that's an easy one. So there's some gimmies here, You know, Ed Temple is another absolute gimme. You know, I mean, Tim Corbin.
Rudolph, yeah.
Right, Don Meyer, I mean, Grantland Rice. But there, it gets hard, too. I mean, a lot of people have weighed in on some things that, like, honestly, like Phil Bredesen, for example, you know? I mean, that's someone that, you know, had a lot to do with sports in this town. You know, civic leaders, you know, sometimes get forgotten about in this stuff. Like, I picked Bud Adams, and obviously he brought a football team here. I mean, he's the owner of the football team. But Phil Bredesen is the guy who brokered those deals.
Yeah, no question about it. And certainly you could make a great argument for Phil Bredesen to be on it. I did look at the list, and I do have some beef
okay.
with Mitch Light. I think David Price is way too high on this list. Number 10 overall. I mean, he's ahead of guys like Bruce Matthews and Pecorine, Shea Weber. Like, I get it. He's from here, and he played at Vandy, but I'm not sure I would have put David Price that high on the list.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's, you know, it's that Mitch Vandy, you know, bias showing up there. But no, but I would agree. I mean, David Price is tough because, well, you know, you're including Murfreesboro, so you're including, you know, his high school career one. So
sure.
that enhances it. And then obviously he was unbelievable at Vanderbilt, but because he's from here, even if he hadn't played at Vanderbilt, he could qualify. Just like, again, Mookie Betts is getting votes because he's from here. If you're
right.
If you're from the area, then it's more than just what he did at Vanderbilt, right? But I still think you're right that 10 seems a little high for him. Like, the next pick, I took Perry Wallace, and I think in sports, you know, there's athletic achievement, but also if you have social impact like that, when you're the first, you know, black varsity basketball player in the SEC, to me, that is an enhancer of what you are on a list like this, you know? So, and yeah, you're right. I mean, Bruce Matthews, I mean, hey, I took Pecorine at 14. Is that too high? You know, maybe. You know, I mean, Rick Bird went two spots after that. You could make a case certainly for Rick Bird to go higher than 16.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I think we had one miss that I would say that we got, there was a lot of talk on Twitter. Mo Patton, you know, got involved in this, and a lot of other people. You know, Big John Merritt from TSU, I think if there's a miss that we could be criticized for, it would be that one. I think he should have been in that top 24. I mean, for what he did at TSU, like national championship teams, you're talking about teams, you know, turning out pros. You know, one of those pros made the list, Richard Dent, you know. Ed Too Tall Jones was in discussion, but I think Big John Merritt, I think that was an oversight on our part.
John Henderson, I remember watching him play at Tennessee and certainly during his time in the NFL, the ninth pick by the Jaguars in 2002, just a mountain of a human being, a two-sport star at Pearl Cone. John Henderson, it was so much fun to watch him play just with how big he was and how dominant he was on the field.
Yeah, that is I mean, I remember him, you know, obviously as a college and pro player, but you hear the stories about him as a basketball player here
yeah.
locally too. So you're talking about, again, I think on that track, you know, what about an EJ Jr.? Certainly a guy
yeah.
we talked about. I mean, one of the great all-time high school athletes from here, no question about it. A guy, you know, certainly someone who – and, you know, there's guys like Ron Mercer and Corey Brewer are people that were brought up. You know, Rick Insel, I mean, the career he's had at MTSU, you know, and as a high school coach, you're talking about all kinds of state titles. And, I mean, it's hard because you have coaches, you have administrators, you have civic leaders, you have athletes. I had a back and forth with a reader about Darryl Waltrip, okay?
Yeah.
Darryl Waltrip. An unbelievable career. Now, the reason, and we talked about him, but the reason he's not on it is because he grew up in Kentucky. And, you know, then he moved to Nashville. He got his career going. That's a hard one because I think for golfers and, you know, because certainly Brant Snedeker is from here, and so he also warrants consideration. Like golfers and auto racers, like where they live during their career doesn't really, you know, like it doesn't really seem to matter, right? Even though someone brought up, well, Tim Corbin's from New Hampshire, but I was like, yes, but he coaches a Nashville team, so you know, that's coaching Vanderbilt means that he's impacting this community with his career. And Darrell Waltrip living here and still living here, and you know, auto dealerships and all that. You know, that's a tough one. I mean, you could definitely make the case that because he was here in Nashville for the duration of his unbelievable NASCAR career, that he should be on there. But we decided, well, he's technically from Kentucky, grew up there, and that's why he didn't make it.
Can you imagine, and going back to John Henderson for just a second, can you imagine playing against Pearl Cone in high school on the basketball court and having to guard John Henderson in the post? Like, no thanks.
You got to just zone it, right?
Yeah.
You got to have a packed-in zone.
You just have, like, four people by the basket trying to guard him. Man, that'd be tough.
Just flop. Just flop every time and try to follow him out on charges.
You know, he's a big guy, but he had, like, freakish athleticism about him. I mean, it was just – I mean, it'd be impossible to try to guard him.
Yeah. Now, another guy certainly was discussed, you know, Jeff Fisher. I mean –
yes.
Very close. And so Bud Adams made it. And, you know, and Floyd Reese. I mean, and that's another thing. And I brought this up, too. We were talking about Jeff Fisher. I'm like, okay, so – and a lot of people be like, oh, 8-8 Jeff Fisher. But, you know, the guy won a lot of games and got this team, you know, to within – it got to this team to the Super Bowl and within a yard of maybe winning it, at least having a shot in overtime. But then it's like, how do you judge the guy who coached the team versus the guy who built the team? Floyd Reese built those teams. Mike Keith – Pete Weber, you know, what about the – I mean, these are both like, – you know, they're going to be in multiple halls of fame, these guys. I mean, they're fantastic, iconic announcers, you know. I mean, it actually is really difficult.
It is, and I want to continue this discussion on the other side of the break. I do see that my high school pitching career was not enough to put me in the top 25, but that's okay. Maybe we'll revisit that at another date. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion of the Athletics Nashville Hall of Fame sports discussion that they put out there. I think a really interesting one. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we're talking about the Nashville Hall of Fame discussion that you guys have put out there in terms of sports on The Athletic. Adam Vingan, Mitch Light, yourself, and John Glenning putting together this list of 24 athletes, leaving the 25th up for discussion and up to the readers and the fans to vote on. And it's been an interesting discussion because there's so many different ways I think you can view this. Adam took Steve McNair with the first pick. Certainly, I think you can make a great argument for McNair. But there's a guy that was taken fifth overall by John Glenning in Eddie George, who I think you could also make a pretty good argument for the number one overall Titan, at least anyway. It's just, it's an interesting list to put together because, like, the margin for error and I think the difference of the list and how you number them and how you order them really just kind of depends on the eye of the beholder.
Right, and remember, too, this wasn't just like, let's all go in a room and agree on this,
and
this,
rank,
this.
Yeah.
It was, you're drafting people. So then you draft them and then you describe, you know, explain your pick. So, I mean, there were some picks on here that my cohorts made that I was like, really? You know, I was a little surprised by some of the picks. I mean, again, we were just talking about, you know, Floyd Reese. You know, it's impossible to do this and not sort of compare the franchises, you know. I mean, in a way, I mean, David Poyle has been the only GM in the history of the Predators. And I do think that and also the fact that he has the most wins by a GM in history, I think that gives him an edge. But, I mean, you could say if you talk about Poyle, he built, you know, a team that got very close to winning it all, and Floyd Reese built a team that got very close to winning it all. You know, I mean, if Poyle's on the list, why isn't Floyd Reese? If Barry Trotz is on the list, and he is, and I thought Barry Trotz maybe went a little high, by the way, number nine. Vingan, there's your Vingan hockey bias.
Yeah.
You know, if Trotz is on this at number nine, why isn't Jeff Fisher on it? You know, I mean, you can certainly nitpick on stuff like that. But, again, it's a draft, so, you know, you never know how it's going to go. It's everybody's sort of reacting to everybody else, and they have their own thing. They have their own thoughts. I mean, I think Bill Wade making it is good. I think Ted Rhodes, you know, he's the first black professional golfer in this country. You know, that's a name that maybe not everyone would know, but I mean, I think that's an important name. Tracy Calkins, a name everybody should know, but maybe everyone doesn't. You know, 3 gold medals at the 84 Olympics in L.A. Harpeth High alum. So, you know, that's what when you do these things too, you're always like, okay, who are we forgetting? You know, you're going to have some kind of omission that people are not going to be happy about.
So, Joe, I'm going to ask you this then. So, 10 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, when if we redo this list, what current Nashville people would be on this list?
Ooh.
A Kumar Rocker, maybe?
Yeah.
A Roman Yossi?
Yeah.
Derrick Henry? Like, who are some of the guys that you would put on the list from the current era and 20 years from
now? Well, those are 3 good names. And I think Mookie Betts probably by then is like, it's probably a gimme.
Well,
right?
I hate to tell you, but the votes about Mookie Betts, they all came from me. I'm just throwing
just
that
keep
out there.
Clicking
I rigged the system.
Just keep
I'm
clicking
sorry.
It.
I got a bunch of emails.
300 burner accounts that he just votes on stuff for.
I just vote on Mookie Betts.
And you would still be doing that even if he weren't a Dodger now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I probably wouldn't.
that's a good question, though. I mean, yeah, who knows? I mean, you know, John Robinson, if the Titans have a great run here in the next 10 years, and Robinson and Vray Rob, you know, they can go in together, Vray Rob, as one name entity. I'm trying to think of who else just might, you know.
John Ingram. I mean, bringing soccer to Nashville, having an MLS team, the involvement he's had with the University of Vanderbilt. I mean,
yeah.
Who knows in 20 years what sort of success Nashville SC and MLS could have had here.
That's a good point. And, you know, that brings up another point on here, too. We've talked about civic leaders and coaches and GMs and owners and athletes. And then what about the money people? They're awfully important, too. I mean, you could go do a Hall of Fame of Knoxville and, you know, you could probably throw a couple boosters on there too, like Charlie Anderson maybe, you know, makes the cut. I mean, how much funding goes into how much of Vanderbilt's athletics funding over the years can be attributed to the Ingram family? I'd say a lot. So there's so many different ways. I kind of do like how Houston did it, where they're like, you know what, cut out all the coaches and everything and let's just do the greatest players. You know, I mean, I thought that was – that's not how most people did it, but I thought that was an interesting idea, and in a way it makes it easier.
I saw where somebody in the comments put Mariota. I don't think Mariota belongs in the Nashville Sports Hall of Fame. It's just my thoughts.
Well, I went back and forth with someone who said James Franklin should, you know, be honorable mention, and I'm like, look, I mean, James Franklin – that's a heck of a run, you know. It's at Vanderbilt, that's tough to do. 24-15, 3 bowls in 3 years, but I mean, it's 3 years. It's 3 years and 24-15. I mean, Dan McGugin's not on this list. Like Dan McGugin, he's honorable mention for sure. You know, I mean, 3 years, I think there's got to be a little bit of longevity with some of these things. And obviously, when you have like a Clyde Lee, for example, you know, when you have an unbelievable college career, you're 2-time SEC Player of the Year. Okay, well, that's only a 4-year span, but that's enough. Phil Hutchinson and John Pierce, really strong. I mean, the top 2 scorers in the history of college basketball for Lipscomb. You know,
yeah,
hard for them not to be on this list. I mean, it's difficult.
Joe, you inspired me, man. I'm gonna come up with my own Tuscaloosa Hall of Fame list now. Because of you, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Top 25.
Top 5 are going to be Nick Saban.
Well, no.
Nick Saban.
I can name a bunch of people that I can put on. Excluding myself, of course, because I'm making the list.
You're just honorable mention. Oh, you're going to make the list.
I mean, I could make the list. It would be Bear Bryant, obviously, 1. I think that's a no-brainer.
Obviously?
Nick Saban is number 1.
No, I agree.
No, Bear Bryant.
Nick Saban's the best college football coach ever.
Yeah, so is Bear Bryant. So.
Well, it can't both be.
Well, yeah. So it's Bear Bryant.
Well, yeah.
It's Bear Bryant. It's Nick Saban. It's Bill Battle. Then Deontay Wilder, because I have to change it up with football. And then back to football with Mark Ingram, first Heisman Trophy winner. Derrick Henry would probably be up there, too. CM Newton, great college basketball coach at Alabama. Wimp Sanderson would be up there.
Joe Namath
would be up there in the top 10. Leon Douglas, who was a good basketball player at Alabama in the 80s, under CM Newton. Robert Horry, Latrell Sprewell. Antonio McDice. There we go.
Look, he's kind of doing this off the top of his head.
Antonio McDice. And Hannah B., I guess. Let's throw her
from
in
the
there.
Bachelor?
Yeah, let's just throw her in there.
See, I'm going to have a
Reese Davis.
I'm going to have a quibble with you because I understand the Heisman, okay? And so certainly Mark Ingram belongs on the list somewhere, but Mark Ingram's not a better football player than Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas should be the first football player you mentioned.
Yeah, that is true.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's guys like that, John Hanna for Alabama, Cornelius Bennett, Don Hudson. Ozzie Newsome, man.
I try to get a little bit away from the football, and I was getting to those guys after Hannah B., okay. But I was trying to get away from football. Because if I would have made a top 25 of Alabama people, it would probably only be football players with the exception of Deontay Wilder or Wimp Sanderson and CM Newton.
Yeah, Wimp. Yeah, those two have got to be on there.
Yeah, exactly. So if I would have made a list like that, it would be nothing but football. See?
Okay.
But luckily, Nashville's, everything's wide open here. That's why I like it here.
Yeah.
So are you taking Bear Bryant over Nick Saban? Is that what you're saying?
I went to Paul Bryan High School, so yeah.
Okay, but
so there's a high school named after him that I went to.
I wonder how many Alabama fans would do that. I don't think that's
the older ones will. Trust me. The older ones will. No, despite whatever Nick Saban does, the older ones will always say Bear Bryant was still better than Saban. Now, I disagree with that. But, that's them. But
You just said you put him first.
But I went to Paul Bryan High School.
Well, okay.
There's a reason
there's
behind
loyalty
this. Yeah, there's loyalty behind this, Joe.
Gotcha.
There's a little bias in this list a little bit.
Paul Bryan High School. No kidding. Yeah, I mean,
when I went there, I did not know who Paul Bryant was when I went to the high school there. Because I was from California, so right. It's just like, I was like, who is this guy?
Is this some kind of governor or something?
I was like, it's a governor. It was like, you guys named a high school after a football coach?
A senator?
I was like, I'm from California. I couldn't imagine going to Pete Carroll Middle School. Like, that would have been awful.
Yeah, see, Bear Bryant he's the most iconic figure, so I get that. And, look, his achievement is hard to match, but I think Nick Saban has surpassed it. I mean, I think if you really are going to compare them next to each other, you think about how much harder it is now to win. That's the big thing for me.
Joe, real quick, who would be in the Michigan Hall of Fame?
The Michigan, like the whole state?
Well, let's just go Detroit. Let's just go.
Because, if you're going to go the whole state, I'm starting
with Magic. We can go the whole state because you represent all of Michigan.
Well, the obvious ones would be like Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, Steve Yzerman, Gordie Howe. There's a bunch of
underrated
guys.
Joe Dumars.
Joe Dumars probably. I don't know though. You got Lou Whitaker and Kirk Gibson. You got Ty Cobb and the Detroit Tigers. You got Barry Sanders,
Larry Johnson,
Matt Patricia,
Calvin Johnson. Wait, Matt. Yeah,
Larry
right.
Johnson too.
Maddie Pat. Yeah, Maddie Pat there. Absolutely. Bo Schembechler, Duffy Doherty. I mean, you got Biggie Munn too. Tom Izzo. I mean, that would be really hard to do in a whole state. What if you were doing the whole state of Tennessee and trying to make it 25, and you got Memphis included, and you got all the University of Tennessee athletes? I mean, that would be brutally tough.
When we come back, Dustin Dupirak from The Athletic will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, what a game that was between Purdue and Tennessee in 2019, the South Regional semifinal. And, man, that's just a punch right to the gut, I know, for a bunch of Tennessee fans listening, given all the expectations surrounding that Tennessee basketball team. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, taking you through this Friday morning. Pleased to bring Dustin Dupirak to the microphone as well, also from The Athletic. Dustin, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And Dustin, obviously, you guys at The Athletic are going through this series of the best NCAA tournament game that you've ever covered. And we heard coming into the segment there, that game between Purdue and Tennessee last year at the NCAA tournament, that was about as good as it gets. I mean, that was just the heart-stopping nature of that game, the back-and-forth nature. It was just an incredible game to watch.
Yeah, no, it really was. And I think, I mean, Purdue-Virginia 2 days later was unbelievable, too. So you see both of those games, and it was like, basically, I could have written about either one of those. Actually, I had to write about Purdue-Tennessee because somebody else was writing Purdue-Virginia. So I had to go back and watch that game and sort of remind myself of all of it, because you just saw so many great shots and so many great plays in those two games. You also had to sort of remind yourself, okay, what happened when? And it really was unbelievable, just the shot making in that game, and just the degree to which the stars, you know, really step up. I mean, you don't always get to see that, and that was a thing I wrote about. Like Klein and Edwards, but then Schofield and Williams were just so terrific. I mean, you just don't always get it that basically everybody that you came to watch that day shows up and makes big plays when they count. And you know, like, you forget just how big of a lead Purdue built, where it seemed like that thing was over, and you know, Schofield and Williams just turn it on to get back in that thing, and then, like, you know, when they come all the way back, then Klein turns it on and really goes crazy. So yeah, it was just one of those unbelievable games to watch, where just everybody just keeps stepping up, making shots, making spectacular plays, and then obviously a lot of controversy at the end. But just really a beautiful basketball game from start to finish.
Yeah, and when you watched it again, Dustin, was it a foul on Lamonte Turner? I watched it like a million times, and it's close.
Probably not. Probably not. I think the thing was, like, I didn't even like rewatch it like all the way. I didn't like watch the replays of it. And you know, you could see how they called it in real time, because he's sort of all over him. But you know, it is kind of the leg kick. I think it's part of the reason why he gets the contact. So it probably isn't. And you know, I just imagine part of it is just like watching a guy sort of just really swallow up somebody in the corner there. You think there's got to be maybe more contact than there really was, because you know, Carson couldn't get anything that was close to a good shot. I mean, and there was contact, so that's probably it. You could see why the ref called the foul, but I mean, in retrospect, is it? Maybe, probably not.
Dustin, I remember watching that game and wondering, like, is Ryan Klein ever going to miss a shot? I think he ended up like 10 for 13 or something like that, 27 points. I mean, it was just unbelievable, the shooting display he put on.
Yeah, no, it really was. Going back and watching it again, you remember, I remember the step back. You know, that was the one that is really the kind of his signature shot from that game. And I remember he almost steps back into Carson Edwards' defender, who's like behind him. It's almost like Carson was trying to get away from the play, and Ryan was trying to just dribble out something. And almost, you know, steps into whoever was guarding Carson at the time. And I remember that three was absurd, but there was a couple other ones. I was like, I forgot how crazy that was. Cause you know, a couple were just like 30 feet deep. But there was a few where he would like catch, and he would be like facing the sidelines and pull up and, you know, square his body from like a 90 degree angle, and wouldn't even look into the rim and hit the shot, you know, like had to like somehow like, had pulled up, didn't have enough, I guess didn't feel like he had enough space to even, you know, square his body to the bucket before he pulled up, but did it, turned, you know, got the rim in his frame of vision while he was jumping and hit the shot. And those were just wild. I mean, there's just so many of them. You're just like, it's one of those things where it's like watching somebody, you know, playing NBA Jam when they're on fire, that it doesn't matter where they are. Or what they're doing or what position they're in, it was going in. It was like just destined. He didn't, you know, and he couldn't miss anything. And and just, you know, the threes, he had some long distance twos that were like kind of fadeaway jumpers. Like, it didn't matter if he was on balance. It didn't matter if he had a clean look. He hit everything. And you know, part of it is just like his, you know, form, his mechanics. Like, he doesn't need a lot of space. He's got a really quick release. But, you know, he doesn't put a lot of arc on that thing, and it didn't matter. He was just on that night and just was not missing anything. It was wild to watch. And he would have, you know, he fouled out with, I think, 2 minutes to go. I mean, he wasn't going to miss. I don't think he got a shot in the last maybe 3 minutes he played. But, I mean, it's like if he would have kept playing, it wouldn't have changed.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That was like, you know, pick the guy up at half court territory. And then you already are dealing with Carson Edwards, who of course had was it was like everything of Carson Edwards in that game. He had like the unbelievable run, but then he also like the shot selection, you know, hurt them for parts too. So at least as I recall. Now, Dustin, you cover Indiana, Purdue, Butler, but of course you used to cover Tennessee for the Knoxville News Sentinel. So this was sort of a clashing of your worlds this game last year. But what do you think about the job Rick Barnes has done with that program, and maybe even compared to what you thought when he was hired?
Yeah, I knew they were in better shape than they deserved to be. That's the best way that I can describe it. Because, I mean, you're supposed to feel pain, frankly, when you hire a guy who has, you know, a Donnie Tindall who has that many NCAA violations. And, you know, it was sort of one of those things where it's like, all right, you didn't know, you know, like not know that he did Southern Miss. I mean, already been in trouble at Morehead State, and you're like, okay, like, you really think this guy's clean, you know, like, and so when you hire a guy and you find you get all that coming down, like, you expect there to be a long-term effect, you know, when you find yourself in a position where you're firing a guy after a year that is supposed to shake it up. Now, I didn't know what to expect exactly from Rick Barnes. I mean, I figured they were going to be good. I figured they were going to be okay. But, you know, he was coming off a not that great stretch of Texas. There was a reason he got fired. I mean, it had been, you know, 10 years since Durant at that point. So it wasn't like he was coming off that that kind of momentum or anything like that. It was like, you know, yeah, DJ Augustine and Kevin Durant were a ways back there. And I thought, okay, well, this is going to be like Rick Barnes is like chill out job where he comes down and, you know, he'll do okay, but this is going to be his kind of retirement gig, and, you know, he's not going to make too much noise and just go, you know, go as bad it's going to be. They're going to be competitive. Maybe they'll make a tournament someday, you know, whatever. And, you know, when he starts recruiting and you're seeing these guys that come in, they're like 120, 130, 150, 160. They're like, all right, okay. Okay, I guess they're going to be all right at some point, you know. But to see those guys flourish and the way they came together and how good they got, I mean, like, you know, Schofield and Williams in particular, those weren't like big time recruits, and he develops the heck out of them. And just the fact that he, you know, like, cared that much, I guess. I mean, that's a weird way to put it, but the fact that he was still invested, didn't look at this as sort of his, you know, retirement job, you know, didn't seem look at this as like a side project or anything like that. Just, you know, again, just really shows just how much he cares about the game. And I was just really impressed with the way he built that team. Obviously, this year wasn't as good, and he had to rebuild and everything, and, you know, he has to going forward. But, you know, thoroughly impressed is just a way that, you know, what it took to build that team, you know, the dedication, just how much invested he remains. And I guess the fact that he was just able to turn it around that quick. I mean, again, when you're in a position like that, I mean, like, when, you know, when Indiana had to get rid of Kelvin Sampson, you know, after those violations, I mean, that knocked them clean on their butts for a while. It took Tom Crean 3 years to build that back. And, you know, I mean, he obviously, you know, felt the need to really tear it all the way down to the studs and get rid of everybody and, you know, all that sort of thing. And that was, you know, his own choice in a different kind of rebuilding project. But all the same, like, I'd seen a program hit rock bottom. And how long it took to build it back up and how bad it was going to be. And it wasn't as nearly as bad for Rick Barnes. He managed to get it together pretty fast. And again, not getting anybody that was a quick fix, not getting that player that makes you great really, really quick. You know, it was a true building project. It took a while, and, you know, he managed to put together a group that really fit and was just, you know, you forget how many really good basketball players were on that team. So did a really special job, I think, just, you know, building that group. Obviously, he's got to maintain it to be considered a success, you know, and not necessarily be like that good every year, but, you know, build teams like that as he goes along. But all the same, putting that team together was really, you know, pretty spectacular to watch.
Dustin Dupirak from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Dustin, thanks so much, man, for taking time to join us and help us relive that awesome game between Purdue and Tennessee. Hope you and your family are well during this time. Thanks, man.
You guys as well. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Dustin.
Absolutely. Joe, when we come back, Pro Football Focus threw out an interesting topic yesterday about the top five college football quarterbacks you've ever seen. I want to get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, Pro Football Focus came out with a tweet yesterday asking people to list the top five quarterbacks that you've ever seen in college football. And Joe, here's how I'm going to approach this, because I think you could go down the list and talk about the top five quarterbacks maybe in the history of college football from a historical vantage point or all these other things. I'm going to give you the top five list that I have ever actually seen play with my own two eyes. And just, you know, I was born in 1992. That's as far back as I go in terms of college football and watching college football. So I'll give it to you this way.
Okay.
At number one, I've got Tim Tebow from Florida. I think when you look at the totality of his career, what he was able to do during his time at Florida, I'd just be hard-pressed, I think, to find a quarterback that's had a better overall career in college football than Tim Tebow. I mean, he was awesome at Florida.
Yeah, that's a hard to argue with that one. I mean, I think he's one of those guys that, like, you knew all along, or at least I felt all along, like, I don't, in the NFL, you know, not sure. And still, he did more in the NFL than I thought he would. He won a playoff game. But as a college quarterback, oh, man, unbelievable player.
Absolutely. And number two, I've got Deshaun Watson from Clemson. I just thought watching him play was unbelievable. He made some throws and made some plays at Clemson that was just incredible to watch. At three, I have Peyton Manning from Tennessee, just given the totality of his career. At four, I put Vince Young. I'm not sure there's been a more exciting college football quarterback to watch in my lifetime than Vince Young at Texas. That game he had against USC in the national championship game was maybe the single greatest performance from a college football player that I think I've ever seen in my life. So yes. I've got Vince Young at number four. And I know, look, you know, I kind of have viewed this from like a total career standpoint. So it's, you know, like for instance, like if we were just doing this off like single season performances, Joe Burrow would be at the top of my list. I thought last year Joe Burrow may have had the greatest single season by a college football quarterback that we've ever seen. But even with that in mind, I've still got Cam Newton at number five. What he was able to do with that Auburn team, I mean, he was just otherworldly good with that Auburn team. So I've got Cam Newton at my five. So my top five is Tebow, Watson, Manning, Vince Young, and Cam Newton.
Okay. So again, so when you said with your own two eyes, you're not saying saw him live. You're just saying watched him
TV in person, or, you know, during your life.
Yeah. That's a good, if it's just everything and not that you've actually seen in person, I'd have a lot of that list. I mean, certainly, I think Vince Young was unbelievable that year. I would also, and I mean, Peyton, Cam, you can't argue with those. I don't know if, I don't know if Tebow makes mine or not. It's one of those things, like someone mentioned Tommy Frazier too. Maybe I'm a little bit biased toward passing, but still, I mean, and not quarterbacks who are more runners than passers, whether that's fair or not. I mean, I think Lamar Jackson still, because he was incredible at both. But Ryan Leaf is another one as a college player, incredible college football quarterback. You know, I mean, that guy was I thought he was going to be great in the NFL. I thought he and Manning were both, and obviously one went one way, went with the other way. I think Johnny Manziel is another. I mean, again, just sometimes the NFL career will kind of influence how you then think about their college career, but it shouldn't. Johnny Manziel as a college quarterback was unbelievable. But I'll give you live that I've seen in person, okay?
Okay.
And I'll tell you, here's a great number one. And honestly, this guy, he got my Heisman vote on this day. Marcus Mariota at Oregon, saw him just shred Michigan State in 2014. And, he made some plays that just defied reality. Maybe that's overstating things a little bit, but he made some unbelievable plays. So honestly, just as a college quarterback, you know, and again, seeing it with my own two eyes. I'm putting him right there. Drew Brees, number two.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of these are, you know, on my former beat. So saw him tear up Nick Saban's Michigan State Spartans. Throw for like 500 some yards, just unbelievable. The funny thing is, in that same year, I also saw Tom Brady, and he's not on this list. You know, I mean, Tom Brady's splitting time as a college senior. You know, for people who don't remember that, it's amazing to think. But Drew Henson was, you know, he was the real NFL prospect. I'm going to go Tua Tagovailoa for sure at Knoxville a couple years ago.
I mean, it
was incredible to watch him throw the ball with the accuracy, moving left, moving right. And I know his receivers are unbelievable. And I know people have legitimate questions about his health. I'm all in on Tua as an NFL quarterback. You got to be healthy. But the way he can deliver that football and move around and make plays with his feet, I think he's going to be great. I'm going to go Matthew Stafford. Got to see him at Georgia. And yep. I still think arm talent, it's about as good as it gets. I mean, different kind of arm talent, you know. Tua, his accuracy and touch, I think, are – I don't know that I've seen quite that. Now, Stafford, just in terms of, I mean, absolute lasers and passes that – you know, you talk about, yeah, guys that can, quote, make all the throws, but he can make more than all the throws. You know, he can make throws that, you know, beyond what most people can make. And then I'm going to go Matt Ryan. I got to see him also as a college quarterback for Boston College, and – you know, just you could tell right away he was incredible. Now, I will say I saw maybe the best quarterback duel twice in 1 year when I saw Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins square off. Cousins won on a Hail Mary in the first meeting. Russell Wilson, the Big Ten championship game, kind of won that game on a half Hail Mary late in the game on like a third and like 20. But those were incredible as far as just, you know, a quarterback matchup. I can't think of a better one.
Yeah, and I mean, you go back through the list, and there's a ton, and I've given you my top five. There's a ton out there, though. Like, you think of some of the Oklahoma quarterbacks, you know, Baker Mayfield, Sam Bradford, Jason White. Like, I mean, there's just been a kind of a quarterback factory there in Oklahoma with some of the players they've had. I mean, Sam Bradford, I mean, it didn't turn out to be that great in the NFL because he was hurt a lot. But him in Oklahoma, I mean, he was an absolute stud with the Sooners.
He was. You bring up one of my least favorite Heisman winners of all time, though, and Jason White.
Yeah.
and he was really good. I don't think he should have won the Heisman that year. But, you know, that was one of those – you know, it's funny because guys get that system quarterback tag, right? I mean, I think back to – if you want to go back, I think back to, like, Andre Ware at Houston. Now, that was a legit – he got, you know, Jack Pardee's offensive run and shoot – he had ridiculous video game numbers, and as it turns out, he wasn't a good quarterback in the NFL, so it's probably fair to call him a system quarterback. You know, Pat Mahomes is a guy who I think got that tag from some people because he's at Texas Tech in that offense, and it turns out, well, he's okay. You know, like the system quarterback thing sometimes gets put on guys, and you got to look deeper than that, and obviously some teams certainly missed on what he was going to be.
As far as, like, one of the most fun guys to watch ever in college football, Michael Vick at Virginia Tech. I mean, he was basically just like a video game highlight.
I'm glad you brought him up because that's a big miss on my part. Yes. Oh, man. I mean, Michael Vick in that year when they should have beat, and he was a freshman, they should have beat Florida State in the national championship game. Oh, he was incredible. And I think even in the NFL for his stretch with Atlanta there for a few years, and you're talking about a guy who is doing stuff that really we haven't seen quite the combination of skills when you talk about the speed, but also the arm, the big, big arm.
No, he was awesome. I mean, they used to like clock how fast he would throw the ball and like how many different receivers' fingers that he's like broken. I mean, it was unbelievable how much velocity Michael Vick put on the ball. I'll throw a random one out there for you. And look, people are going to look at his NFL career and just think he was a total bust. Jamarcus Russell at LSU. There was a reason he went number one overall. I mean, he was really, really good at LSU.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the thing. You're right. It's a lot of, and again, I think Johnny Manziel is another example of, like, don't forget. I understand what happened in the NFL, and that ends up, and Ryan Leaf, the guys who end up being busts a lot of times, they get forgotten about. But we're just talking about college quarterbacks. By the way, I mean, Eli Manning, we talk about Peyton Manning. Eli Manning at Ole Miss was an unbelievable player, too.
Yeah.
By the way, that Heisman voting of 03, I voted for Larry Fitzgerald, as everyone should have that year, for Pitt. 92 catches for 1670 and 22 touchdowns. But system quarterback Jason White won the Heisman.
Which one's a bigger Heisman upset? Jason White over Larry Fitzgerald or Charles Woodson over Peyton Manning?
Well, the thing is, I think everyone knew Jason White was going to win it. They were, like, undefeated that year and everything. I think it was just the wrong vote. So I think it was a bigger upset that Woodson won it. And, you know, you don't think the defensive guy is ever actually going to win it, you know?
Right.
So that's the thing. But, I mean, Woodson, in a lot of years, I think Charles Woodson absolutely is a Heisman winner. And he had some iconic plays that year. I saw one of them live, a one-handed interception on the sideline in East Lansing. I mean, he was worthy. It's just that I think that year, I think Peyton should have won it.
When we come back, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on what the Titans have done so far in free agency. That's coming up next. But first, rocknashville.com is your community resource page, brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this like we do everything else together. Go to rocknashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. Back with Teron Davenport next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.